This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehiya Suhib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
This incident was very ugly, and the two people lost their life in the skirmishes, and so many houses also were set ablaze.
That was reporter Alpha Jallo on killings that occurred in the holy city of Medina Ghanous in eastern Senegal. Details coming up. Also, a new survey shows Arab public opinion has turned sharply against the United States because of the Gaza war. And Nigeria's anti-drug agency says it has seized drugs worth millions of dollars destined for export. These stories and more on Africa News Tonight. But first, our top story. At least two people died and dozens suffered serious injuries when a fight broke out between two communities in the holy city of Medina Ghanous in eastern Senegal. The skirmishes started shortly after Eid al-Adha prayers when a minority community from the Guinea-Bissau side of the border attacked the convoy of a religious leader. I spoke with reporter Alpha Jallo in Senegal to brief us more on the matter.
Yes, this incident happened yesterday immediately after Eid prayers. The religious leader of Medina Ghanous, who is a very influential leader, immediately after he finished praying Eid, when his convoy was going home, his convoy came under attack by an other community. These communities are members. They are all from Gabu. Near Guinea-Bissau, but they've been based in that area for a very long time, and they have not been agreeing with the Medina Ghanous people, because Medina Ghanous is one of the places where Islam is strictly practiced because of the strictness of how the religious leader said that they are going to practice Islam. I think this is the reason why they cannot see eye to eye for a very long time, and yesterday's incident was very ugly, and the two people lost their life in the skirmishes, and so many houses also were set ablaze.
The casualties are two people were killed. Did the government intervene from both sides?
Yes, immediately the incident happened. The police station and the gendarmerie station, who got their bases within the locality, they came and they wanted to prevent the violence from spreading, but their members were not enough. So what happened was, according to my sources, they called for reinforcement from neighboring Kolda and Tambacounda. But until yesterday night, there were some little attacks, because the problem has been dated for a very long time. A similar incident of this nature also occurred in 2007 during Eid prayers. But it was not as serious as yesterday's incident, because all the other incidents, they were only small quarrels, but they never resorted to this kind of, clashes, which resulted to loss of life and business, and people's properties were also vandalized.
Alpha, can you talk to us about the significance of this conflict and basically how it relates to religion?
Yes, exactly. That's a very good question. Medina Ghanous is, strategically positioned. It is located in eastern Senegal, but borders with Guinea-Conakry and also Guinea-Bissau and part of the Gambia. But then it is also a very important religious center, because just as I mentioned, that it is one of the, areas where Islam is strictly, practiced. And the other important thing is that every year, these Medina Ghanous, they organize what we call a religious retreat for 10 days. It is known as the Dhaka. And this one, people from all neighboring countries, the Gambia, Senegal, Guinea-Bissau, they all gathered inside the bush. And then, be preaching, be also reciting, chanting Islamic songs for almost 10 days. So it's a very important Islamic seat. Because of their sickness to Islam, that's why some of these Gabu people, the one I told you, the other community, which is the minority community, they cannot see eye to eye with them.
So finally, is it peace now in Medina Ghanous? in eastern Senegal?
Yes, relatively calm now. Yes, relatively calm. The governor of Kolda came yesterday. I mean, the prefect of Veringara, which is the department, they also came. But still now, it's just a little bit precarious because the religious leader, they are very angry. And you know that there are people who are very, very, very well known within the whole of Africa because of their strictness to Islam.
That was reporter Alpha Jallo in Dakar. Around 30 million internally displaced persons, refugees and asylum seekers live in Africa, accounting for almost a third of the world's displaced population. The Eastern Horn of Africa generally hosts the most refugees on the continent. For International Refugee Day on Thursday, Carl Schimberi, the Norwegian Refugee Council's media advisor for East and Southern Africa, tells VOA's Carol Van Dam that conflict has been one of the biggest drivers of refugees suffering enormous hardship this past year, stretching resources to the breaking point, especially in Sudan's neighboring countries.
The all sorts of crises, all sorts of crises pushing people away from their homes, forcing them to flee from the war in Sudan, which we've seen for the last year has been growing, getting worse, getting fiercer, displacing more and more people, millions internally displaced, millions across into neighboring countries, drought, floodings, as well, climate change. So all sorts of crises. Sudan itself has displaced millions into extremely impoverished and crisis-ridden countries around it, from Chad to South Sudan. Poverty, there's lack of water, there's lack of medical facilities. My colleagues in these countries are really struggling to keep up with the influx of people who are seeking some kind of safety.
You mentioned these countries around Sudan, like they're going to countries in neighboring areas where things aren't really all that much better. I mean, the resources are stretched so thin in these other countries where they're trying to contend with their own problems, right?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I was in Chad a few months ago just to check the situations and conditions of refugees fleeing from Sudan. And for the Chadians themselves, there's the absolute minimum is completely absent, from water to health treatment, medical facilities, schools. So you know, when we're opening a school for refugees, it is also a school for local children because some of them have never been to school, for example, in the border areas with Sudan where the millions are fleeing. South Sudan has been facing crises for years and now is also facing all the influx from Sudan as well. People, mind you, it is refugees, but also people of South Sudanese descent who had never set foot in South Sudan before. So all of a sudden, they're back home in a home which they've never lived, in which they almost have no connections. Right? So it's extremely vulnerable people, people who have faced all sorts of violence, rape, mass extermination of their village, of their families, extended families, women I've met who have seen their husbands held at gunpoint, all sorts of trauma that they are fleeing from. And there's so very little resources that can help us help them.
You mentioned you open schools and you have these medical needs too, which are a priority, and people who need food and water. How do you prioritize where you go to give it to these people, and how do you set up your infrastructure, basically? I guess you're mostly based in these border areas of those countries that you mentioned.
I mean, most important is coordination. Coordination is key with other NGOs, with the United Nations, trying to look for the gaps, bring out our specialization with other NGOs, which are specialized in also in other fields. So we have colleagues in other organizations who are doctors, whom like MSF, who we depend on, everyone depends on for the medical services in a place like Chad, where services are so basic, for example. And we provide, for example, education. We open schools based on needs. But obviously, there is the very stark reality that it's also based on the available funding. So we are constantly appealing and advocating with donors, with governments to provide that funding. We're all the time advocating for more resources, for better policies, for more access. And there is the political side, which we advocate for, which is extremely important, because that's the only way there could be a solution to any of the root causes of all these, from climate change to conflict. There needs to be the political engagement.
That is Kari Schembri, the Norwegian Refugee Council's media advisor for East and Southern Africa. He was speaking to VOA's Carol Van Dam from Nairobi, Kenya. The latest nonpartisan Arab Barometer survey of five Arab countries in late 2023 and early 2024 show Arab public opinion has turned sharply against Israel's staunchest ally, the United States, because of the war in Gaza. The survey was conducted in Jordan, Lebanon, Kuwait, Mauritania, and Morocco. William Lawrence, Professor of International Relations at the American University in Washington, discussed the view of the U.S. in the Arab streets with VOA senior analyst Mohammed Al-Shinawi.
It's to be expected. If you look at the various polls over the years, sometimes the U.S. has as low as 1 or 2% approval rating. And so when it goes down, if it drops from 2% to 1%, I don't think that really makes a big difference. But in the Arab Barometer, they ask different questions about the U.S. in a different way. So sometimes the scores are higher than, say, the Arab Center poll. But it's to be expected. I mean, the way in which the issue is a central issue for Arab and Muslim populations, an emotional issue, a historic issue, and the way also it's being covered in the Arab media as our cause that all Arabs and Muslims need to fight, even to the point that some Arab and Muslim media are quite pro-Hamas. It's at the point where there are almost no voices that are going to go against the general conception that this is Israel and America's war on Palestinians. And with the death tolls above 30,000, a million people starving and displaced, at least, and pummeled by American weapons, I can't imagine any Arab or Muslim following the news is going to have a positive opinion of what's going on. I was interested in the result that the Moroccan, result went more positive for the U.S., contrary to some of the other countries. And there were some interesting things in the crosstabs and specific to certain countries. But overall, there's really no good news and no good sense in the Arab and Muslim world towards the United States. And it's carte blanche support for Israel's war on Gaza.
A poll in Tunisia conducted partially before the October 7th and partially after strongly suggested that this shift occurred in response to the events in Gaza. Perhaps even more surprising, the surveys also made it clear that the United States' loss has been China's gain. Arab citizens' view of China have warmed in Arab Barometer recent surveys, reversing a half-decade trend of weakening support of China in the Arab world. How would that serve the Chinese strategy in North Africa and in the African continent?
The Chinese strategy in Asia is a geostrategic one, a militaristic one that has a big security component, whereas the Chinese strategy in Africa is primarily an economic one in which it free rides on a security umbrella set up by African states in cooperation with the Americans and the Europeans with almost no Chinese role in security. And so if China is making money in Africa and it wants to make more money in Africa, anything that increases Chinese popularity and decreases the U.S.'s popularity is a net benefit to Chinese aims. But I think there's more to it. I mean, Tunisia in particular, I've lived in seven Arab countries and I've spent time in almost all of the rest of them. Tunisia is probably the country that is the most offended by Israel's policy towards the Palestinians. And this has a long history in Tunisia going back to the Israeli bombings of Tunisia in the 1980s, which were never forgotten by Tunisians when they were posting the PLO in Tunisia. And so you're going to see a sharper shift and a sharper decline in Tunisia with the outbreak of this latest war in Gaza, which I believe is the sixth war in Gaza since 2006.
That was William Lawrence, Professor of International Relations at the American University in Washington, speaking with VOA's Mohammed Al-Shinawi. You're listening to Africa News Tonight on The Voice of America. And for more information on these and other stories from the continent, please see voaafrica.com. There you'll find all your favorite VOA radio and TV programs and a whole lot more. For world news, check out voanews.com. France is planning to reduce its military presence in Western Central Africa to around 600 troops, three sources told the French news agency AFP. The move is in line with President Emmanuel Macron's plans to limit the French military footprint in the region. According to a plan under discussion with African partners, France is planning to drastically cut its pre-positioned forces in Africa to only around 100 troops each in Gabon and Senegal, down from 350 today, 100 troops in Ivory Coast, down from 600, and 300 in Chad, down from 1,000. The reduced presence could be periodically expanded based on the needs of local partners, the sources said. In February 2023, Macron announced a noticeable reduction of French troop presence in Africa as anti-French sentiment is running high in some former colonies and countries like Russia are vying for greater influence. Nigeria's anti-drug agency says it has seized drugs worth millions of dollars destined for export when it raided a warehouse in the southern part of the country. Mike Mbonye reports from Port Harcourt.
Operatives of Nigeria's National Drug Law Enforcement Agency, or NDLEA, recovered cocaine and methamphetamine with a street value of over $3 million. During a raid on June 14, Femi Babafemi is the agency's spokesperson. He says its investigation shows the cocaine was packaged for export outside of Nigeria.
I'll tell you that indeed, with this kind of volume, it's obvious that this actually meant for export. And if you see the packaging, the way they are packaged, it also shows that this illicit substances that are targeted at Europe and other parts of the world.
International law enforcement agencies have said cocaine-producing cartels in South America often ship the drug through West Africa before sending it to Europe. Babafemi says some of the methamphetamine seized was bound for local distribution and consumption. He says the agency and stakeholders in Southeast Nigeria are working hard to stop its production because of its harmful effects on youth. The spokesperson says the agency has an advocacy program for the youth known as War Against Drug Abuse Social Initiative.
That particular advocacy campaign will be exactly 3 years this month. And so all of this, we've been taking this rant to schools, even starting from secondary schools to tertiary institutions to out-of-school youths and across the places, especially communities, workplaces, as well as religious worship centers. All of this we've been taking to different places to ensure that Nigerians, especially our youth, are well informed to be able to take the right decisions when they are faced with the pressure of taking these illicit substances.
Dr. Benjamin Kamde, a Port Harcourt-based medical practitioner, says the massive drug seizure is a welcome development. He says psychoactive substances such as cocaine have harmed young Nigerians and that healthcare providers struggle to help them.
The effect, the neurological damage to the health of the youths and even some adults is alarming and is of a great medical burden on we the practitioners, because a lot of time, most of the cases, you have to go through to make sure that you pull them out of the situation. And in most cases, it becomes a fatal condition, and which tells more on the medical system of the nation.
Babafemi said the United States Drug Enforcement Agency and other international law enforcement agencies were cooperating in the fight against illicit drugs in Nigeria. This is Mike Mbonye for VOA News in Port Harcourt.
The
The U.S. Supreme Court last week struck down a ban on a gun accessory that allows many semi-automatic weapons to fire like machine guns. The decision keeps guns and gun owners at the center of the U.S. presidential campaign. VOA correspondent Scott Stearns has the story.
Bump stocks are aftermarket additions that allow weapons to fire hundreds of bullets a minute. They were banned by then-President Donald Trump in 2018.
This morning, we also completed the process to issue a new regulation banning bump stocks.
Following a 2017 shooting at a music festival in Las Vegas that killed 60 people, the shooter used a bump stock to fire more than 1,000 rounds from a hotel window. Overturning that ban last week, the Supreme Court's conservative majority said the then-Trump administration overstepped its authority in outlawing bump stocks. The decision keeps guns a central campaign issue in this presidential election. The Trump campaign said Americans should respect the high court's decision. On Friday, Trump told a birthday rally in Florida that his election will safeguard gun rights in the U.S. Constitution's Second Amendment.
We got to get people, gun owners, you're not going to have your gun very long if you don't, because they want to take everything away. They want to take your guns away. They want to take your ammunition away. They want to destroy the Second Amendment.
President Joe Biden's reelection campaign called on Congress to reinstate the bump stock ban. Vice President Kamala Harris.
When we think about the decisions others are going to make in November, there's a clear contrast between where we stand and the former president. Let's not forget the former president literally said folks need to get over it as it relates to the gun violence issue in America. So let's take this seriously. Let's understand that we all have the ability to weigh in on this important issue.
Trump supporters in Congress back gun owners' rights to use bump stocks. Florida Congressman Byron Donalds.
The bump stocks, if you will, is really just a brace for people who have arm injuries, who still actively shoot. That doesn't mean that they're going to target citizens. It never has.
Biden supporters in Congress say the Supreme Court decision will lead to more loss of life. California Congressman Adam Schiff.
Without a doubt, there'll be some future tragedy utilizing these bump stocks. And we will all ask ourselves, why is this necessary? Why do we have to live with this?
Nearly a third of Americans say they own a gun, according to the Pew Research Center. Before November's vote, the High Court is expected to rule on another gun issue, this one concerning gun rights for people who are under restraining orders for domestic violence. Scott Stearns, VOA News.
United Nations experts say activities of armed groups in the Central African Republic have increased largely due to a spillover of the conflict in neighboring Sudan. The panel of experts cited confirmed reports of air raids by the Sudanese military around border areas and of fighters from the rival paramilitary rapid support forces crossing over to recruit from armed groups in the Central African Republic. The Associated Press says the new study shows the UN registered almost 10,700 Sudanese refugees who fled across the border by late March. Scores of Kenyans gathered outside Parliament yesterday to protest controversial tax hikes. French news agency journalists at the scene reported that police deployed tear gas and made at least three arrests. Kenya has struggled with a cost-of-living crisis, which critics say will only worsen under the proposed levies. The cash-strapped government has defended the move, projected to raise some 346 billion shillings, or $2.7 billion, equivalent to 1.9% of gross domestic product, as a necessary measure to cut reliance on external borrowing. Dubbed Occupy Parliament, news of the protest was shared online after an activist leaked legislators' contact details, urging people to bombard them with calls and messages to shoot down the proposed tax hikes. Among the bill's most contentious provisions are a motor vehicle tax set at 2.5% of the value of the car and the reintroduction of value-added tax on bread. And with that, we wrap up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehiyes Wuhib in Washington. And on behalf of our producer, David Van Dee, and our engineer, Keela Williams,